The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Oh, 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 oh. Dr. Rab, what you got, brother? There you go. This show is called Dark Side of the Pooch. It runs at least 5 days a week here on the TKR app and wherever you get your podcast. And according to our recent numbers, people are listening to them more in the podcast than they are live, which is just fine because you can go back and listen to hundreds of shows, if not thousands of great podcasts, the Tony Curry Radio Podcast Network. Wherever you get your podcast, you can find us available. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World, in business for nearly 50 years. They're down there in beautiful Homewood for any exotic pet needs. They got you covered. 879-1331. Go see Seth or Angie and check out Seth's Toy Closet. He deals in wonderful collectible toys, watches, Battlestar Galactica stuff, Star Wars, and more. It's just a fun place to be. Check out Ed's Pet World in beautiful Homewood. Anything adventurous, anything fun going on in the world of the Rossbridge Animal Hospital where you reside on your own?
Man, every day is fun. I wish I could give you some crazy happenings, but it's just been pretty much standard operating procedures around here.
All right. We always peruse the internet to find some interesting pet and dog and cat stories. Today we're going to straight emails because we got a ton of them. info@tonycurryradio.net. info@tonycurryradio.net. We call it mutt mail. You ready to go?
Yeah, buddy.
Trip in Pensacola wants to know about pet insurance. What's the deal with pet insurance? Good idea, bad idea? When should you buy it? Should you get it early? Should you get it late? What's the best thing to do?
They're pretty flexible. I've known people that have, you know, not gotten it until the pet's older, because that's when they start worrying about, you know, a lot of catastrophic things or expensive things. And I mean, it's pretty easy to get, and they'll, you know, it seems pretty flexible. I don't think they're as bad as about pre-existing, you know, conditions and stuff as they are in people. And so the thing that's different about insurance in animals is when you are in at the vet's office, you're still responsible for the entire balance. Now, you know, people run their business differently, but in our business, it is at our office. You know, it's payment upon service, and then if you have insurance, then they will reimburse you based on whatever your policy is, and you know, after you hit your deductible and all that stuff. So you still you need to anticipate paying a full bill at your veterinarian's office, and then the insurance company will reimburse you down the road.
Okay. We know how insurance goes for humans, and it's just the opposite. But have you had anybody have a pet insurance that had issues trying to collect on their claim?
I haven't.
Okay, good.
I think I would hear about it, you know, but so far I haven't. I mean, it seems like people are really happy with the policies that they have. I think that if you are a pet owner that is very involved in your pet's life and, you know, wants the absolute best, no matter the stage of life and no matter what's going on with them, mm-hmm. I think insurance is a good thing to do. Now, you know, let's call it like we see it here. There are some people where the pet is a literal member of their family. Mm-hmm. And there are some people where they just kind of consider it as, you know, a buddy and, or as property, you know, and there are some people where they're kind of, mantra for their pet is give it a good life and feed it till it doesn't eat anymore.
There you go.
You know? And if that's where you're at, then you probably, insurance probably isn't for you. But if you want the absolute best and you want your pet to live as long and as well as possible, then you may want to look into it.
And for people who don't know, what are we talking about standard wise? What are we talking about? 10, 15 bucks a month, or is it what is it? Do you know? Do you have any idea?
Man, I have absolutely zero idea because I have never had pet insurance. And personally, I never will, because even if I have insurance, I can always do it cheaper than whatever the insurance company is going to reimburse me for.
I would doubt you have it. All right. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. This is The Wonderful Dark Side of the Pooch. It's a title that Dr. Rab Stewart picked from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 205-208-0301, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, of course, on Facebook, as well as their website. Tabitha and Hoover, she said, I absolutely love the show. I don't miss an episode. She wants to know, what does Dr. Rab think dogs actually dream about? She's heard questions in the past about chasing squirrels and stuff like that, but what do you actually think when you see your dog kicking its leg or making a little whimpering noise? My dog the other day jumped up like it got bitten by something, ran into the kitchen and just stared off into the corner and then just laid down where it sat. I don't know if it was having a nightmare. I don't know if it was sleep dog walking. I don't know what was going on, but what do you think dogs dream about?
I think they dream about chasing stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, because those four legs or those 4 feet, they're going. And so I don't know what they're chasing. I don't know if they're chasing a ball or a frisbee or a chipmunk. They're probably chasing whatever they get to chase on a regular basis. So, you know, my dog chases wildlife in our yard, so he's probably chasing that. But if you've got a dog that likes to run after balls or fetch a stick or whatever, I think that's what they're chasing.
Do you think dogs have dreams about mating?
Oh, I think yours did. I think that's why it jumped up and took off into the great unknown or whatever.
I'm not getting the bulbous here, brother. I'm getting out of here. You're probably right. The only reason I ask is I've never seen my dogs dream a lot, but I've never seen one air hump. I've never seen it. And you would think that if they had dreams, I mean, I'm not being disgusting here, but you would think if they had doggy sex dreams, they'd probably do that, right? No?
I don't know. I've never seen air humping. Personally, I mean, I don't know. Let's get a. I think maybe we should get a little camera and put it on him.
I'm good, man. First email from Saskatchewan, Canada, from John, says, why do we cut the tails off dogs? Where did it start? Why did it start? Is it humane and does it hurt?
It started based on whatever the dog's job was. In a lot of cases, usually it was a performance type alteration. Now, some of them are cosmetic for sure. But, you know, whenever this was started a long time ago, a lot of these dogs had a job and their tail was getting in the way of their job, whether it was flushing out rodents or, you know, hunting, you know, something for game, you know, for food, mm-hmm. or if it was, you know, something to keep the varmint, you know, out of whatever area they were policing. Now it is mainly a way to just signify what the breed standard has become. And it's definitely something that you don't have to do. You know, for example, Rottweilers' tails are docked. And we had a Rottweiler in here the other day, and the tail had not been altered at all.
Yeah.
You know, same thing go with
Yorkies. Did it look
Yorkies.
Weird?
Oh, yeah. It was like, kind of strange, you know, because you're not used to seeing that on a Rottweiler.
Yeah.
Same thing with Yorkies, Corgis, Weimaraners. Vizsla's also have a docked tail, although they dock it much longer than Weimaraners and the other breeds we just talked about. And you know, some dogs are born with tails that are short, like English Bulldogs. You know, those are tails that are not docked. That's just the way they are. They may appear that they have, you know, have been surgically removed, but they have not. And you do it when they are less than 5 days old. Most of the time, it's when we try to get them done. And I tell people that it's probably in the same kind of vein as human circumcision. You know, I'm not trying to get in what people's stance is. That's not what I'm saying. But sure. What I'm saying is it's done at such a young age. It's not incredibly painful and they don't remember it.
And is there a bandage you put on the end of it? Does it bleed? What, and how is it done?
You put a couple of stitches in there. Okay. And it's done with a ligation tool. Mm-hmm. So like you put a clamp on there, you measure it, you know, you kind of measure it first. You put a clamp on there to prevent bleeding, and you snip the tail off, and then you put a couple stitches in there, And you know, usually you're doing a whole litter of them and you move on to the next one.
Okay. All right. There you go. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Download that TKR app. You can listen to the show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. First run shows, as soon as they start running, we put them up on our podcast series. And you can check those out wherever you get your podcast. And look at the Dark Side of the Pooch picture there. It's a beautiful picture of our Blue Heeler. It's perfect album cover there with Dark Side of the Moon. And Dr. Rab came up with that. 879-1331 is the phone number. Ed's Pet World. They bring you Dark Side of the Pooch every single week. I love this email. This may be one of my favorite emails because I'm going to get the inside. I'm going to bring some humanity to Dr. Rab Stewart. You ready?
I'm ready.
Janice in Rainbow City says her father lived in Oregon. He's 86 years old and was wanting to move. And she invited her father to come live with her and her husband, his two grandkids. He's 86 years old. She said, we love him to death. And we thought it would be wonderful for him to spend more time with us in the latter part of his life and spend more time with his grandkids. The problem is this, and they have plenty of room. He's got a bedroom on the first floor, but he's never been a big pet person. He does not like our Maltipoo or our Wire Fox Terrier, so we're not talking big dogs. And he's been yelling at our animals. He's been disciplining our dogs, and our dogs are allowed to be on the furniture. He doesn't allow them to be on the furniture. We feed them from the kitchen table. He doesn't like them to beg. Evidently, he's not real friendly with their animals, and she doesn't know what to do. Please ask Dr. Rab, what should I do? These dogs obviously are part of their family, but so is their 86-year-old father and the grandfather of their children. What should I do?
Well, Grandpa should have he should have brought some of that recreational stuff from Oregon, and he could be more relaxed around the dogs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, this is you know, it's kind of tough, you know. And I've had people ask me this kind of same question in the office, and you know, it's a family dynamic, you know, and it's really hard for us to get a grasp of it and tell them how to best handle it. But, you know, I think if the person who doesn't like the pet, but like maybe has a different idea of what pet ownership should look like, maybe finding a way for them to develop some empathy toward the pet, would go a long way in helping him, you know, adjust to what those pets mean in that household.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe just giving him some examples of how those pets enrich the family's life, and especially the grandkids, because I think that grandparents, you know, they really focus on those grandkids. And if we can maybe somehow show him how much the grandkids love the pets, maybe it'll kind of rub off on him. But, you know, anything you can do to help promote the human animal bond will also help. So I've, you know, there are movies and books and stuff, and some people might think this is kind of silly, but anytime I read a book or I watch a movie and it's got a dog or a cat in it, mm-hmm. or some animal that does something heroic, it always like, it makes me, you know, just love them even more. I just finished reading, it was a super long, the unabridged version of The Stand by Stephen King. Did you ever like watch that or read the book or anything?
I have not. I've seen Pet Cemetery, but not that one.
Yeah, Pet Cemetery is a little different. Anyway, yeah. It's got this dog in there that's like just a super heroic dog. The dog's name is Kojak. And it's stuff like that that really endears you to pets. So I don't know if maybe that will help, if they can either tell some stories about how their pets are awesome and how much the grandkids love them, or maybe just do anything that can promote that human-animal bond.
That is great advice. And I have been around several people that did not like dogs. But then when they get comfortable enough, normally they realize your house, your rules. And I can only imagine what a dog's going through when it's used to sleeping on the couch in its favorite spot every night. And all of a sudden you got someone yelling at it saying, get off the couch. But he is a human, and I know they love him as well. But that's super, super good advice.
And the other thing you could do is like get grandfather, if he will, to do things that will make the dogs really love him, you know, like give him a bunch of treats to feed the dogs.
Oh, yeah.
I think that if he sees that, you know, that kind of, that unconditional love that pets can give, I think if he is the recipient of that, he might change what, you know, what his outlook is.
If you really want to have some fun, you can hide some treats on the old man and not tell him. Stick him in his trousers, maybe put him in the bottom of his bed. He'll come to love those dogs one way or another at the age of 86. He sounds like a dear old man, but he just doesn't like pets. Do you know what, this is Dark Side of the Pooch, by the way, with Dr. Rab Stewart, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, their website as well, 208-0301, brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Their number is 879-1331, area code 205, if you're coming from Canada or anywhere else outside the Birmingham area. Do you know what cynophobia is? Cynophobia.
Well, that would make me think that it has something to do with, like, a color.
You would think, but no. I will say this, that more people have cynophobia in the United States than the contingency of Asian Americans in this country, and there's more cynophobics than there are gay people in this country, which is kind of hard to believe, but 9.5% of people in this country are fearful of dogs.
It is cynophobia. That's cynophobia?
That is cynophobia, yeah. And Barbara in Birmingham said that she's always had a fear of dogs. She wished she didn't, and like many people who are, I'm claustrophobic. I wish I wasn't claustrophobic. I had to be in an elevator all this past weekend. I was freaking out, but you know, and it's, as a person that goes through that, I understand there's nothing really to fear, but it's something that you have to work through. But she said, would you please just talk about if you have any customers, patients who have a genuine fear of animals that have to bring them into your shop, into your hospital. And also just be a little bit more, we have more dogs now in the United States than we've ever had in the history of the world. And certainly COVID played a big part of that. There's animals everywhere. And now people are bringing their dogs into work. People are still working from home. They're walking them more. We're getting them cut like we cut our kids' hair. We're doing everything. And that's wonderful. She said, but would you please explain to people that if you're deathly afraid of a dog, just to have some compassion for those people.
Yeah. I mean, fears, I mean, it doesn't matter what your fear is. Like, people can say it's an irrational fear, no matter what it is. But to you, I mean, it's very rational and it's real. And so we may not understand, especially what, and in our line of work, you know, I can tell you from experience, this morning I had a dog that I had cynophobia over because it was ready to eat me for breakfast.
Yeah.
So, you know, I can relate to this on both sides, but yeah, I mean, obviously the average, you know, the everyday run of the mill dog or cat does not, you know, make me fearful at all, but there are a lot of dogs and cats that have made me very fearful. So that is something that, if someone tells me they're afraid of dogs, I'll be the first person to say, I get it. Yeah. But you know, I don't know if she ever, if the writer ever would want to maybe try to, change that, maybe not. And it may be something that doesn't matter the age of the dog. It doesn't matter the size of the dog. It's just something that makes her uncomfortable, and that's totally fine. But you know, if you can find a nice little puppy that likes to wag his tail and not bite, then you know, that'd be a good place to start.
Yeah, and I would think that, you know, there's obviously, and I've worked with Dr. Josh long enough to know there's a big difference between a fear and a phobia. If you've had some type of trauma, maybe you were bitten as a child, or you were traumatized by some type of animal that ran through the neighborhood after you or whatever. And much like my daughter has a fear of heights. But I don't think she really has a phobia of heights. She says she's phobic, but I don't think she is. She could look over the side of a railing. We were up in Chattanooga this past weekend and it freaks her out, but it freaks most people out. And so there's a big difference between, but I certainly get it. There's a lot of people, I have a snake and people are like, I'm not even coming into your, when I showed my other house, I was told by my realtor that I had to put a blanket over top of my snake cage when they showed the house, because they were afraid people wouldn't buy the house because I had a snake. I said, are you serious? And she's like, yeah. She goes, you don't get that? And I said, no, I really don't, because they don't do anything. They sit there. Most of the time you don't even see it. It's in an aquarium with a rock on top. And she's like, I got people that won't even come into your home because they know there's a snake in there. And I'm like, okay. So, I mean, you have to be respectful of that. I certainly get that. So
Not like the snake comes with the house.
No, exactly. And so, you know, every time I did that, I had to turn the lamp off and it was showing all day. I had to make sure it didn't get too cold and it was kind of a pain, but whatever. Tom in Poughkeepsie, he has heard the cats pass gas 21 times a day, which is about the same number that a normal human passes gas. Is that true? Why don't we smell it and why don't we hear it?
I don't have the answer to any of those questions.
Have you heard that? Have you heard that? I mean, every animal passes gas. If they eat, you pass gas, right?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, they definitely do. And I don't know if it's 21 times. You know, I have no idea. I would imagine that, those numbers are hard to get at because they're not always around us. Number one, and so if they have a silent but deadly, no one's going to know it because they're upstairs in the guest bedroom under the bed that no one goes in.
Yeah.
So here's what I would say about this is I wish that whoever conducts these studies would pay me to conduct the study because I would love to do this and just be able to sit around in a room all day and count and smell cat farts. I mean, what a job. Can you imagine if you're at a party and someone asks you what your occupation is, you say, well, I am a certified cat fart counter smeller.
Yes, it's a great icebreaker for any party you go to, I would think. info@TonyCurryRadio.net. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. He's Dr. Rab Stewart. He owns and runs the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. I follow him wherever he goes. If he moves to Oregon, I will follow him to Oregon to get my pets taken care of. He's fantastic. Check him out, 208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet. On Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. On Facebook, Steve in Inverness wants to know the cat question. Are cats colorblind? I think we've talked about dogs. I think dogs can see a couple colors. He said, if cats are colorblind, then why do they chase laser lights on the floor?
Oh, they can see color for sure. Okay. They're like dogs, and they don't see it exactly as we see it, but they see color. When it comes to laser pointers, cats will chase anything that they have an interest in. Mm-hmm. And I think that the laser pointer, it just kind of gets their attention because it's not. Cats are pretty smart. I mean, they're an intelligent animal, and they know. I mean, they can figure out things on sticks. They know who's controlling it. They know where it's coming from. It's the same thing with something on a string. I mean, they will eventually figure that out and lose interest. But I don't think they can quite wrap their heads around a laser pointer because it's not attached to anything. And so to them, it truly, looks like some type of independently moving thing. And so it interests them more than other things. I think the color probably has much less to do with it than the fact that it is, it's an object that they just don't really understand. It's almost like a living creature to them.
Okay. And our final question here on Dark Side of the Pooch, and then we'll find out what's going on at your office, if anything fun's going on during the spring and summer here. Piper in Chattanooga wants to know, why do cats sound like babies when they mate? Are they in pain? And that is the most amazing sound. And it's almost happened to every one of us. You will go, you will put your slippers on in the middle of the night and you'll run out and you will think someone's left a baby on your front porch. I mean, it sounds just like a crying baby. What are cats going through when they mate?
This reminds me of the lyric, from the Grateful Dead song, "It Looks Like Rain," sung by, Bob Weir and Donna Godchow. But there's a lyric in that song that talks about how, if you didn't realize that the cats were making love, you would think that they were like trying to kill each other. Uh-huh. So that's in the rock and roll history right there. Mm-hmm. Okay. Another example of that, maybe it's more like, Red Hot Chili Peppers' Aeroplane. They like their pleasure spiked with pain. So maybe it is, a little bit painful, but it's not so painful that they don't like it.
Do they have the same, what is it called? Bulbous maximus? What's the thing the dogs have? Is that thing called gladius bulbus? What is it called?
Yeah, the bulbous glandis. The bulbous glandis. But that's not what, that's an accessory organ. It doesn't have anything to do with like the actual act of doing it. But what male cats do have, and we've talked about this before, is on the head of their penis, they have spines, and it helps keep them engaged so that they can conceive. better. So it's probably not incredible. You know, I mean, I'm sure it's a little bit uncomfortable for the female. And if the female puts up a fight, she can make it pretty uncomfortable for the male too. But, you know, it's just it's the way God made them.
That sounds like having sex with a stingray. That doesn't sound fun at all. Let me ask you this. Let me ask you this. Do animals have to like each other and to mate? I mean, I've seen enough, shows on Discovery Channel, about, you know, animals that you know, they show off for other animals, and then they're actually chosen. They're chosen. And I know the penguins have one mate for the entire life, but I mean, does an animal have to like another animal, or can another animal just go, like a cat? If a cat wants it, will he go get it?
I think so. I think it's more the female though.
Yeah.
I think it has everything to do with the female because, they know when it is time for them to reproduce, and that's what drives it. You know, I'm not really sure how much, attraction drives it in animals like it does in people. You know, people were either attracted to them physically or emotionally or hopefully both, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that it's really, it would almost be like if you were, you know, the last humans on Earth, you know,
yeah.
And it was kind of up to you, you wouldn't really think about your attraction. You would just think about repopulating the Earth. And I think that's kind of the way animals see it for the most part. They see it as kind of their duty, and their hormones kind of guide them on that. You know, I mean, their bodies tell them when it's time. And so then the female will make itself available because, you know, the male may be able, and there's no may about it. I mean, the males can smell and sense when a female is in season.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're going to hang around more. And then it's just kind of up to whichever male can, get to that female first. And that's how it happens. But I think it's out more of, you know, driven by hormones and the understanding that it's just time to reproduce.
It's the cycle of life, my friend. It's amazing. Anything fun happening at the Dark Side of the Pooch's Rossbridge Animal Hospital? Any interesting stories you want to share with us before we let you go?
Oh, man, you know, we're always cutting puppies open and pulling out interesting things. So that's always, you know, usually on the menu, pulling out little Legos or, you know, kids' toys and things like that. We did that one day last week. That's always fun. But, you know, other than that, it's just, taking care of the routine stuff.
By the way, I wanted to give you an Australian Shepherd update. Remember I asked you a couple weeks ago about our next door neighbors who got an Australian Shepherd?
Oh, yeah.
They gave it back.
I said
I hadn't heard anything over there in a while. Everything going good? He's like, dude, we went 4 days. He said the thing just wouldn't sleep. It slept like 2 hours a night. It barked. He said it got. And I said, you know, if you get a dog, and I know an Australian Shepherd's probably one of the most difficult, at least according to the last two people I know that have gotten Australian Shepherds, that just couldn't handle them. If you can't handle a dog barking in the middle of the night, maybe it's just not time to get a dog right now. Because I don't think that Australian Shepherds are that different than any other puppy. I think they come with some baggage, much like a pit bull does. And it's unfortunate because they are some of the most beautiful, smartest dogs. I've got one, and it's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, it takes an owner and a home that is equipped to handle that type of, neediness and energy.
Yeah. No doubt. All right, my man. Thank you so much. I appreciate your great show.
Yeah, man. Talk to you next week.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.